Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk antiques today. We welcome back Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair in Hudson, New York. Founded by Colin Stair, a fourth-generation furniture specialist and featuring a team of experts with over 150 years of combined experience, Stair is one of the leading regional auction houses in America. If you think you've uncovered something valuable, a hidden treasure, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, 800-348-2551, or you can email us. Try not to send pictures. We can't show them over the radio. It's voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We discuss antiques today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair in Hudson, New York. Colin is a fourth-generation furniture specialist. He worked for Sotheby's in New York and England before opening Stair in 2001. He was an early innovator of online auction technology back when the internet was exclusively Morse code and spoke signals, and has successfully balanced the expectations of a modern marketplace with the charm of a traditional auction house. Lisa Thomas is director of the Fine Arts Department at Stair. She began in the Department of Paintings and Sculpture at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. At Christie's, Lisa was in charge of contemporary prints at Multiples and was also responsible for the appraisal and sales of 20th century European American and historical American prints. She has been a specialist on Antiques Roadshow. If you have a question about antiques, this is the time. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Colin Stair, how are you?
We're terrific. Thank you very much.
You're
for
both terrific.
Us.
Were you speaking for Lisa? No.
I'm going to speak for Lisa. We just spent an hour in the car getting
I'm
here.
Terrific as well. Well thank you.
Thanks for asking.
It's beautiful outside. It's a great day in upstate New York.
You know, I always read that you're a fourth generation furniture specialist.
Yeah.
So
silly.
That goes back to the early 1900s?
Well, yeah. My great grandfather started in 1911 in London, started a firm there. My grandfather took it over in 35 and did that. My father, who used to do a show here actually in the 90s, worked at Sotheby's, had various other jobs, had his own business, Landergan and Stair, and then I started. I kind of think we've evolved into more than our own roles, right, Lisa? Like,
right.
We get pigeonholed at larger auction houses, but I spend as much time looking at modern art and silver, you know, not as in-depth, certainly, as Lisa and Lauren, who worked with us, but we look at lots of things, and we were talking about this on the way here, we're also sort of culling to make these little presentations and auctions that we do.
And yeah. At a regional auction house, you really have to function like a generalist a lot of times, because yeah. A lot of times we're the only person out on a visit.
Yeah.
And even though our specialty may be one collecting category, we have to be able to identify a good piece of silver,
yes.
A beautiful piece of jewelry, an important piece of furniture. So,
now, I remember when we did the live event. Oh, gosh, I don't remember when it was, but we did a live event together at the Hart Clewitt not that long ago. And there was a piece or two that you phoned a friend.
Yeah.
When you're on one of these situations where you're out at an auction or whatever, do you often call in an expert helper?
Well, yeah, I'll be doing a visit and I'll take a picture and text it to Lisa and say, what do you think? And I know what to look for, which she'd be asking me, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
We're constantly going back and forth. Bob Scott and David Tripp. David's our coin guy. David's the guy who looks at antiquities. He can name every Greek and every god in the whole realm. He knows everything, every religious subject. I mean, so he's our go-to guy for many, many things.
Yeah.
We have somebody for Russian. Lisa worked at Christie's. I worked at Sotheby's. And we have all those old pals that are happy to share their information.
And we always say, you know, you can't know everything. And I think the most important thing when you're a fine art specialist is knowing what you don't know, but knowing how to figure it out. And that includes having a nice network of contacts to, you know, past colleagues and people in the business that you can rely on. And then they rely on us. So it's really it's a back and forth.
I'll ask you first, Lisa. I'll go back to Colin on this in a moment. When did you know this is what you wanted to do?
Pretty early on. I'm going to say mid to late high school. I was very interested in art history. I sort of thought I wanted to go into the curatorial realm, which is why I started working in a museum.
Yeah.
But I found out pretty quickly once I was there that the pace was a little slow for me. And I really didn't want to go to grad school in my 20s. And so I moved to Christie's and started up that ladder there. The pace is much faster at an auction house, and there's an element of business involved in the auction business that you don't necessarily have when you're in a curatorial department in a museum, and that really appealed to me.
There's more excitement?
For me, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved working at MoMA. It's just a very different atmosphere, and for me, the auction house just suited my personality better.
Now, Colin, I brought up at the beginning that you're fourth generation.
Yeah.
Was there pressure from the grandpa
or anybody? None whatsoever. They all served in the military. I was happily going into the Marine Corps when I was 18, right out of high school. And my father said, why don't you give this 3 months, work with me at Sotheby's and see what you think. And I got hooked. And by the time I was 19 and or so, I sold something that I owned. And I went out and bought a Harley Davidson with the money.
Yeah,
and I was
buddy.
Like, okay, I like this. You know, I just, you know, I always wanted to just race cars. And but my path changed, and I still do those things. I get to enjoy them even more. But to Lisa's point, the more I know, the less I know.
Yeah.
And
tell me about it.
You know, like learning this stuff is like learning whole new languages. It's incredibly appealing to me.
So what I mean, the subtext here is you're both really smart, right?
No,
is that the whole
no.
thing?
No, brains of the operation here.
Oh, really? Oh, Lisa, you're the one?
No,
we're different types of smarts, I think. You know, and there's more of us. There's a lot of other specialists and other people that work with us that have great expertise. So
I think there's some innate abilities that auction house people have. And yes, you do need to be book smart in a lot of ways, because, you know, specifically for me in the fine arts area, you need to have a very good understanding of art history and what it all means. But you also have to be street smart when you work at an auction house. Going back to what we were saying on visits, you know, there's a business element involved. There's a personal element. There's negotiation involved. And you have to be able to incorporate all of those skills into what we do every day.
Psychology.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of times we're dealing with people that are selling a house. Things are happening quickly. They may have lost a parent or aunt or uncle.
Hand-holding involved. Very emotional situation.
Like, you want to understand these people a little bit. Like, how did your parents or your grandparents get here? What do they do for a living? The backstory is also very, very interesting to us.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether they were the world's biggest birdseed suppliers or, you know, worked for Fabergé. It's all very interesting.
Can birdseed be antique?
Bird speed can be, as I learned on Park Avenue, very, very good business to be in.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. You know, David Tripp and Bob Scott were on, I think, last week. And one thing that I think you share with those guys is that love of continued learning. I asked Bob about why. I gave him 1 minute. I said, answer me this question. Why would I want to collect stamps?
Yeah.
And basically, the upshot is, it's a ticket to learn a lot of things.
Yeah. It really is. Geography, history, the history of the world through stamps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also through art and also through furniture.
Through furniture.
This is
what
I'm saying. Yeah. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about antiques, for Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair. Now, generally speaking, when you email us at voxpop@wamc.org on any of these shows, I ask that you not send pictures. Well, Stephen said 8 pictures. But the good news is that I've had our experts take a look already. So I'll read you this. Hello, Ray, Colin, and Lisa. I'm interested in getting help identifying and evaluating 2 antique hand-painted vessels handed down by family to me several decades ago. I believe their markings indicate one is of Chinese origin, while the other is of Japanese derivation. Item 1 is only marked along the round top rim with 3 equidistant symbols and measures 9.5 inches in diameter, 4.5 inches high, weight is 3 pounds, 11 ounces. Item 2, bottom 4 photos here, thank you, Stephen, is rectangular in shape with markings on the bottom that seem to identify it from the Meiji period. I don't know if I said that right. It has some small cracks, which I understand are typically found on ceramic surfaces of a certain age. The vessel, possibly a planter, sits on 4 feet, measures 10 inches by 7 1/4 and 6 inches in height. It weighs a very substantial 9 pounds. Thank you for your assistance. And that's from Stephen. So, what
wow,
do you think?
That is a good description.
That is a great description, including weight. Stephen, thank you so much. I wish everybody take notes, but don't send pictures. So, since we're rewarding bad behavior
yes,
here,
exactly.
The bowl that you have is sort of Chinese in style and Chinese export and rose medallion pattern, but it's late. They started making it in 1820, 30, and they never stopped. It's still made today. If I'm looking at yours quickly on Ray's mini computer, I'd say that based on the pictures, it looks like it's 1890, 1900. Generally, we call that a punch bowl. It's more of a serving bowl size. It's rather small, which I was a little surprised at. It's not worth a lot of money. It's gone out of fashion a little bit, maybe $200 to $400. The other piece that you have, which is probably more Chinese and very thickly potted, to use a term that my friend Lauren uses, that's part of the ceramic or the clay. It was cracking when it was fired. It's a Jardiniere. I have
The Jardinieres? They backed up Elvis. They were great.
So you're absolutely right. It's like a little planter or put potpourri in it. I have one just like it myself from my mother. It's worth $100 to $200, and it's probably post-1920, I would guess. But nice-looking things and worth keeping care of because the Chinese market keeps going up, up, and up.
Interesting. I mean, some markets, we've talked about this, have been going the other way.
They sure have, yeah. But the Chinese things made for Chinese domestic use, these two items were made for Chinese export, so they don't have as much appeal as the things that were made for Chinese use. And the Chinese are kind of collecting their culture back. You know, the world tipped 100 years ago and stuff started filtering out of there. And now they are such the economic superpower, they want their culture back and their historical culture.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We'll take a break in a moment. Another email here at voxpop@wamc.org. Gonna guess this is not in your wheelhouse, people. This is from Fran. And Fran says, I know this doesn't qualify as antique, but are those antiquated Disney VHS tapes with a black diamond on the spine worth more than a buck or two?
No.
It's
funny. I just did it at a rather prominent estate in New York.
Yep.
And I had a guy come to look at videos and CDs and all that sort of stuff. And no, they're just not worth
it. But
those
aren't antiques, though.
Those are by IRS.
I mean, technically based on age, they're considered antiques, which really ages all of us sitting here, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But we do sell a fair number of Disney cells and other sort of Disney related material. But I think the VH falls into collectibles.
You know, category. I would just hang on to them. You know, the world's heading analog, man. You never know.
Does anybody have a VHS player anymore?
I do.
Cassette tapes are back, though.
Yeah.
So
DVDs are back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't know DVDs. Well, to show you how out of it I am, I did not know DVDs ever went away.
Are you still looking for the Blockbuster?
Yeah. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get to the phones in a moment. It's Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. Antiques today. Who doesn't love Sonny Rollins? I love Sonny Rollins. 800-348-2551 is our number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And it's Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. And let's go to the phones. All right. We'll go to Ashford, Connecticut. Terry, you're on.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here. Are you there?
Yes, we're here. Are you there?
Barely.
Okay.
Anyway, I have an old icebox that my parents got at auction something like 75 years ago, and I'm just trying to find it if it might be worth anything. I don't know if I can find a name on it anywhere. There's a little plaque, brass plaque on the top door, but it's pretty worn.
You know, they can be worth a little bit of money. Is it an oak-cased one, or is it a metal one?
No, it's oak.
It's oak. You know, in restored condition, they can make $800 and for collectible ones, but they've got to be in really perfect nick, and they have to be working, I'm afraid.
Working icebox.
Working icebox. But, you know, for people that are doing like
working?
A...
Working?
Yeah,
It's just an, it's passive,
but
right?
But this is, but so I also consider an icebox like a freezer refrigerator. So it's not a plug-in job then.
No.
Because it's a real
icebox.
Throw a
block of ice in the top.
All right. Yeah. So that one's a little bit different. So oak.
Yeah, I say icebox. I mean icebox.
Yeah,
I mean
buddy.
Icebox. Okay.
Well, and if it were made locally in the Hudson Valley, it would be of interest because we had
ice harvesting
on the Hudson River in a couple of different locations. So.
Yeah, but I'm still thinking like I've seen those at country auctions and they never sell more than $200 or $300.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's doing like a cool old vintage bar or garage, you know, and I the reason I also say that is I've seen people modify those and make them and put a refrigerator unit in them as well.
Yeah. So, or turn them into
is
tables.
Is there a way to determine manufacturer other than the plaque?
No, that's really about it.
All right. Thanks. I'm done. Thank you.
Terry, thanks a lot for the call. Now, we've been through this many times. I ask you always, you said in restored condition.
Mm-hmm.
That's a funny thing,
you
right,
know,
with antiques?
Not, yeah, we're not talking about a Schoharie County painted blanket chest.
Yeah.
An icebox is something you want to keep in good condition. And, you know, my grandmother would say, get me a pop out of the icebox, which meant the refrigerator.
Oh, I know.
So that was my reference.
Old school.
Yeah.
I think there's a Honeymooners episode where they're messing with the icebox and there's actually ice in there. Was it early 50s, right? So let's go to Suzanne in Sunderland, Massachusetts. Hello, Suzanne, you're on.
Hi, I'd like to ask about two items, if I may. The first is a full set of sterling silver flatware that's in its original box. And the design on it is called Heirloom Damask Rose.
Oof, boy, you've got me on that one. I might ask for a little assist from Lisa,
okay.
Which manufacturer that is. It could be Marley. It could be, I don't think it's Tiffany. Lisa, what are you thinking?
Looks like it's from the 40s.
Does that make sense, just about? And how many?
Oneida Heirloom Damask Rose, possibly.
There we are. So yeah. The Oneida Manufacturing Company. How many pieces do you think is there?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not looking at it, but it's, you know, my mother loves buying stuff like this.
Oh, good.
So it's in the box and it's the full, forks, small forks, knives, spoons.
So we sort of do this by service for 8, 10, or 12. Let's take your...
I think it's probably a service for 8.
So let's take a service for 8. You've got 8 forks, knives, spoons, soup spoons, butter knives. You know, the thing, it's silver, I think... I haven't checked in a week or two, but silver is over $50 or $60 an ounce. So if you're interested in selling it, this tends to be the time. Young people really aren't into collecting and using silver, but everybody seems to still have it.
Silver's great.
Yeah,
I love silver.
I think so. We use it all the time. And I would think you're probably very easily in the $2,000 to
$3,000 range. Wow.
Yeah.
Just
right.
Based on weight alone.
Based on the weight alone.
Yeah.
And, less about the antique aspect and more about the raw materials.
A lot of times that comes up with the coins too.
The coins, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, as David will tell you, it's really the value of what the gold is worth and what it's trading for.
All right, Suzanne.
And my second question is a piece of what I refer to as a ladies' parlor chair.
Sure.
It's green velvet.
Mm-hmm.
It's Victorian. The back of the chair is sort of, the upright part is sort of quilted. And the seat is a little bit stained. The backing part is in good shape. The frame is in excellent condition.
So can you see a little bit of wood around the upholstery as well? So is it showing wood?
Oh, yeah. It's the wood is beautiful.
Okay.
It's all beautifully carved wood. That's why I think it's Victorian. I'm not sure about what the wood is. Could be mahogany, but it could be something else because it's not heavy like mahogany.
You know, so that chair ranges from $50 to $5,000.
Wow.
There's a lot of intricacies. If it was if it was a bentwood chair by Belter, and it could be this. If it was Austrian and Thoné, it could be that. But the general sort of ones, and they made millions of these chairs in America and England and in Europe, are $50 to $100 each.
Let me ask you a question, Colin, on Suzanne's behalf. Is the internet her friend in this case, or will it cause angst and annoyance par excellence?
You know, it just depends on how you feel about this sort of thing in WebMD. And, you know, are you ready to
really dig?
Yeah. I mean, so I think In this case, Lisa, you could probably do a photograph and do a search and see if you can
You could do an image search and possibly
get in the ballpark.
Find a similar chair that'll get you into the ballpark.
Or you can just send Ray 14 emails.
Suzanne, thank you very much. You don't have to send any pictures. 800-348-2551 is our number. Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas from Stair join us today. By the way, how are things going at the shop?
Great.
Good. Yeah, yeah. It's full on booming. You talk about interest. Lisa's discovered a fabulous watercolor by Turner, one of the greatest English painters ever.
We have it on view now.
You know, Mr. Stair got it out of the apartment.
A treat to see it.
And you're not going to see a Turner in upstate New York unless you wander into a museum, and I'm not sure you're going to find one there either. Yeah. The largest collection, told by Lisa, is at the Tate. So we've got, and we've got this beautiful interior from this world-class interior decorator called Charlotte Moss. So beauty is on display. Like
that's great.
Springtime.
Now, I'm only familiar with Turner from Bachman Turner Overdrive, which is
second cousin.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Our buddy Joan is in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray. I have to ask, are you hearing me okay? Because I'm on a speakerphone thing.
Well, you sound okay, Joan, but you always sound great. So go ahead.
You know, Ray, I needed that affirmation.
What do you got?
I need some more information, too. I'm the current custodian of some Bird's Eye Maple furniture that I believe was used by my grandmother when she was quite young. Not a matching set, in terrible condition. But I just would love to know more about Bird's Eye Maple furniture. And, its value. Considering the source of the tree.
Well, the Bird's Eye Maple, and I'm going to go back in my wood identification class with Professor Bruce Hoadley here. Those were basically like a canker sore on the side of a tree. It was a growth.
Yeah.
It was a deformity, and the Bird's Eye Maple formed in there. It sort of stunted the growth, which created all those little Bird's Eye flecks. I have a large collection of raw Bird's Eye Maple that I bought from somebody. I got very excited in the late 80s about this. And it generally is used as a veneer because it's there's not very large pieces. So it's sawn very thin and applied with glue to a harder substrate. So generally, you're probably looking at Bird's Eye Maple stuff. It was really, really popular in America after about 1790 to about 1820. It had a real run. And then again, about 1900 to 1930, it had another big run. They used it a little bit in England, but primarily in American material. It's delicate, but it is beautiful. I'm a huge fan of Bird's Eye and Tiger Maple. You can be in touch with us, and we can take a look and tell you what we think about it. I would... restore it, take care of it, treasure it, and find somebody to help you take care of it. Because, you are just correctly the custodian of these things, as we all are.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Joan. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. It's Antiques Today with Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair. And let's see. We'll go to Rosendale. Judy, you're on.
Hi. This is Judy,
yes.
And I have a small watercolor pen and ink by John Heliker. He's a WPA artist.
Sure.
And it looks like it was done in maybe 1936.
Mm-hmm. How big is it?
It's about 8 by 8 inches. It's
okay.
Small.
Okay. John Heliker, he is a well-known American artist from that mid-century period. We've actually handled quite a number of his paintings and works on paper at Stair over the years. I'm very fond of his work myself. He sort of straddles American modernism into the early abstraction period. So it's a very interesting period in American modern art. The works on paper are always worth less than oil on canvas, and yours is on the small side. So at auction, you're probably looking at something in the mid to high hundreds, so 600 to 900, 700 to 900, something like that at auction, in good condition.
And it's in good condition. How would I go about selling it?
You can get in touch with us through our website.
And there are a number of auction houses,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That would be the way to do it without... just search around. When people are searching for an auction house, Are there fly-by-night organizations, without naming them, or are there those that have perhaps less than sterling reputation?
Sure. Like any business, you're going to run into bad actors in the art and auction business. The best thing to do is to get a referral from somebody who you trust, or a gallery owner who you know can refer you to an auction house that they're comfortable with. It's one of those things. It's like a doctor. You probably want to get a couple of opinions.
Yes.
And then make your decision based on the information you can glean from talking to them and doing a little online research.
All right, Judy, thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Time for a few more, a couple anyway, before the next break. Roz is in Woodstock. Hello, Roz.
Hi.
You're
Are
up.
You hearing me okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Great, thank you. So I have two questions. I have a silver bowl, which I have been told is a Schiebler bowl. It has his stamp on it, and it is really beautiful. It's kind of, the flowers on it are kind of three-dimensional. I don't know how else to put that. They're hammered out, I guess, and really nice. But looking online, Schiebler's work, it seems to be all over the place price-wise. So I'm like, who knows?
Are you sure it's what does it say sterling on it, or does it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so that
it does say sterling on it.
So we're an American maker. It's really good looking, sort of, you know.
Yes.
You know, pre-modern, slightly into
sort
the
of Art Nouveau style.
Yeah.
Art Nouveau.
Yeah.
How big?
Yeah.
How big, roughly? Dimensions wise.
About 11 inches across. And like 4 or 5 inches high.
You know, again, we're probably into the realm of something, again, given the silver weight, I think it's going to probably drive up its price and be worth 5 times what it was worth 10, 15 years ago. And I'm going to say in the $300 to $500 range,
yeah.
Lisa, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that ballpark.
That's good to know.
You know, but polish it up, put some candies or nuts in it, put it out. This stuff is so smart looking. Everybody's scared of using silver. Mrs. Stair and I use it all the time.
No, fancy. You polish it with toothpaste.
Yeah, well, you can do that too, sure. But it's to be loved and enjoyed.
Yeah.
All right,
yes.
Roz.
And can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I have a watercolor painting by Jeffrey Baker, a British painter who lived in Christchurch. And it's was done probably pre-war. Anyway, any ideas about him or how I would find out what that might be worth?
How big is it so Lisa can think about that a little bit? Ballpark. Inches, not maybe 18 by 12 or something.
He's an artist I'm not familiar with, and there are a lot of artists who have a similar name, Jeffrey Baker, so I'd have to do a little bit of research to give you really specific information.
People have told me I should take it to Great Britain, and then it would be valuable.
Yeah,
a long trip, though.
But worth it.
You could send some photographs. I mean, there are a lot of artists that have specifically regional markets in the country where they're from.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad suggestion. If you do a little Googling, you may be able to find a regional auction house in England or New Zealand, because Christchurch, I think, is in New Zealand.
No, this is Christchurch, England.
Oh, it is Christchurch, England. Okay. So
yeah,
I think a little internet research could probably turn up a regional auction house for you over there, and you could send them some photos online and see if it's something they could help you with.
That's a good point, Lisa, because we do believe putting things in the right marketplace is really, really important.
So interesting.
If we had a work specific, we might tell somebody, you know, this artist sells really well. And I was speaking to an Irish auctioneer the other day, and I was like, we should send you all the good Irish furniture because it makes 5 times as much. So that characteristic. So, you know.
Yeah, certain collecting categories are really regional.
Totally.
It's Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair in Hudson, New York. How's Hudson, by the way? Everything going well?
Busy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's cuckoo banana town.
You know, it got so hip 20-some-odd years ago, right?
Yeah, no, it's turned around the corner, and we got a lot of changes happening there, and I think hopefully for the best. And we've got a whole new political scene, so it's going to be interesting.
Cool. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more call before the next break. John, coincidentally, is in Hudson. John, you're on.
Oh, hi there. I have some of what I'll call tribal artifacts, sculpture, like masks, figures that I'm an artist. I traded them with, a prominent art dealer that you would know in the area. I won't mention the name.
Thank you.
I would like to, is there someone you could recommend who could give me sort of like appraisal or, you know, valuations and potentially even, is that something that you work with?
We have
the works are from Burkina Faso, Northwest Native American, South Indian, Ganesh sculpture, things of that nature.
You know, there's a lot of cultural things going on in that marketplace and a lot of things and are kind of being returned to some of those parts of the world. So we sort of backed out of that market as it was ever changing, whether it was African or Indian for that matter.
As have most auction houses.
As have most
honestly,
auction houses. Yeah. However, we do have, as we were saying earlier, access to people that we could recommend. And I have a number of specialists. If you'd be in touch with us, we could put you in touch with. We're also happy just to give you a little drive-by and take a look at it, because there's certain things that I think myself and Muffy, who works with us, know about this stuff that we could tell, point you in the right direction.
Now, you're pretty busy people, and so you're offering your counsel for nothing to our listeners. And remember, if you're asking folks, it may be a while. These two are extraordinarily busy.
I'm sure he'll make us a cup of coffee, and we'll have a new friend. And this is how we do it, man. You know.
All right, John. Thanks a lot. We got to take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas join us. It's Antiques. We'll check the email bag in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas from Stair in Hudson, New York. The number is 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's see. Let's do a few emails. Carrie in Durham, New York. Herman Miller chairs. We have a set of four fiberglass Herman Miller Ames shell chairs from the early 1960s. There's some rust on the legs. Two of the chairs do have some chips in the fiberglass. Are they worth anything? If so, where's the best place to get rid of them?
Well, you've got lots of options there in terms of selling things, I think, all over the place. I would spend a little time cleaning them up at least and get the rust off, stabilizing them. You're not going to be able to do much about the fiberglass seats. And yes, they have some value, but condition is everything with mid-century furniture. And for four chairs, you could be looking at $500, $600, $700
if you can
get them spiffed up a little bit. You know, you could take the sharp edges off the fiberglass and, you know, to clean them up a little bit. This is a good moment.
There's quite a market for this kind of material. The younger, you know, we talk about the older generation of collectors sort of aging out of acquisitions. That there's this younger generation coming up, and this is the kind of thing that they're really looking for.
Why? Why the mid-century?
I think it just appeals to them culturally. They're not as interested in old furniture for the most part, but sort of mid-century through to contemporary just, you know, culturally is appealing to them.
A number here is 800-348-2551. It's Lisa Thomas at Collins there. And a few more emails here before we jump back to the phones. Duke writes in, work cloth, 107-inch fancy cut work cloth, lace trim, some lacy cutouts from the 1920s, Indiana.
Boy, got me stumped on that one, Duke. I am so, so sorry. That's not something that I've traded in, seen, sold a lot of. So I'm going to need to do a little research myself.
Work cloth. What is that?
I think I know what it is, but I'm not really 100% sure.
Okay.
You know, Duke, you've got me there.
Andy in Delmar writes in, I have a 1967 life-size photo of a Greyhound bus in the original box, never displayed. It was a promotional item by Mason Williams. I see some prominent museums have one. What's the best way to find a buyer or auction for it? I'd love to see it displayed. That's a life-size.
Life-size of bus.
What's a blue?
That sounds very cool.
Where are you going to hang that up?
That sounds very cool.
And never like unrolled. That's super cool.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a little research, I'm sure, pretty easily.
Yeah.
And figure out the printer, the manufacturer, and I guarantee you there's got to be a comparable out there somewhere.
But, yeah, and I think probably some of the online services, if we can say.
Yeah, go ahead. You can say some.
Artsy, you know, Etsy even has a fine, you know, an art and photography section. Some of these online, eBay even has a fine art photography section.
Yeah, and this is what we call automobilia and petronalia sort of things, and that are collectibles around automobiles. And there's entire auctions just dedicated.
That focus on
it. So if you decide you want to sell it, put it in that kind of specialized auction.
How big is the box? I mean, the picture is a life-size Greyhound bus.
Ray, I think it's probably rolled up.
But still.
It's pretty big.
I mean, come on.
It's pretty big.
And how many trees had to get be killed for that?
I know. But I guess where would they put it, on the side of buildings for advertisements?
You
or maybe maybe it went up on top of a, it was a billboard.
Could be.
That makes sense.
Kind of. I love that weird, kooky.
Well, and he said it was printed for promotional purposes, so that's probably right.
Billboard. That's a cool thing.
All right. Mike writes in, milk can cart. I have a milk can cart. My family bought it at a farm auction 65 years ago, over 65. It was old then. It's all original, unrestored, has large wheels. Farmers used to load it up to bring their milk to the road to be picked up to be sent to the creamery. I know it probably has some value, but I'd like to donate it to someplace to just display and be preserved. Any suggestions?
Lots of farm museums out there in the rural New York State that I would strongly recommend reaching out to. Again, this is something that I think can be restored. And what a fun project to do with your kid or neighbor or somebody and get that thing back to its original paint and color. And just what a great piece of Americana. So, yeah, they're worth something, but not a lot of money, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that you have to use the word passion instead of dollars.
Interesting. Here. You know, Mike says he offered it to the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, but they already had one.
Yeah,
so.
Well, there we are. There I mean, go. It's not going to be easy.
All right, here's a furniture question from Norman. If my email would cooperate. I got a feeling Norman sent pictures because it's taken a little time to load. All right, we'll move on. This is from Mary. Is there a crash course one can take to learn about vintage books?
Ooh, that is an interesting and good question. I would say probably not a crash course, but there are a couple of very good online vintage book dealers that you could spend some time online going through and, you know, teach yourself about them.
Okay.
I'm not sure if there's anybody who offers an actual course.
Yeah, what I would do is I would find the best person near you, go volunteer your time to work for them. Mm-hmm. Volunteer means F-R-E-E, and stay there until you become annoying or they ask you to leave.
There used to be an antiquarian bookstore in Albany. I don't know if it's still there downtown.
That's what basically Lisa and I did. I mean, we just listened and listened and learned and learned and learned. And it, for me, it clicked after 4 years. It started really, really clicking. So it takes a long time.
Book dealers really like to share their knowledge. I mean, books obviously is an area. Somebody who's interested in books is interested in knowledge and education. And then, you know, that correlates to sharing.
And
so
I would just encourage you to go for it. And, you know, there's so many good independent small booksellers selling antique books out there. And you could learn so much from them. And they would be dying to pass along that knowledge, I bet.
All right, our number here is 800-348-2551. Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair join us to talk about antiques. One more email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. I got Norm's email to load here. We purchased a solid chair, and no pictures, by the way. So Norm did follow the rules. Just want that to be
thank
clear.
Thank you, Norm.
Norm says, we purchased a solid cherry bedroom set in 1964 and a solid birch Cushman trestle table chairs at Hutch in 1966. We have used them ever since. Are they considered antiques? Are they valuable? How would you suggest going about selling them?
You know, they are not by definition antiques. I mean, the IRS says it's 100 years old or older, you know, but they're sort of mid-century cool. Norm, you're sort of a mid-century cool guy, I guess.
Wow.
So I think there is a market, as Lisa said. There's a group of people that want to remember their youth or remember things of what they look like if they're in good condition. They're worth a little bit of money, not a lot of money. But, you know, worth checking into, and certainly don't put it to the curb, you know?
We have so many emails and so many calls. You guys are on, every 4 or 5 months, right? May have to, in 27, we may have to up this because the outpouring is insane. Let's go back to the phones. In Erie, Pennsylvania, Kathy, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I inherited a table, which it's over 200 years old. I did a little bit of research on it, and it was in the family home. We had to settle an estate last year. Anyway, I believe it's a Timothy Loomis in Connecticut. Either that or his apprentice, Thomas Hayden. And it seems like it's in really good condition, but it needs to be appraised. And I can't do that where I am. It's either going to be Connecticut or that part of New York where you are.
Tell me a little bit about your family.
Well, this was in a farm home in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. And what's the is it, does it a central pedestal? Is it four legs? Does it have drop leaves? What does it look
like? It's got the three legs. It's three legs, drop leaf. It has a very unusual mechanism for turning the top of the table.
And who identified it as Loomis?
I did.
That a girl. You know,
I'm serious. Yeah. I might not be right, but it certainly looks like a photo.
It's part of that school of Connecticut River Valley furniture, and there's very regional characteristics to that. And he's sort of one of the top of the pops of cabinet makers as they go. So it's a good thing to go to. You know, you can be in touch. We can point you in the right direction, give a little advice. We're happy to do that. But there is plenty of people out there we could point that. There's appraisers that just specialize in American furniture. We know people in your neighborhood that know about American furniture.
There's also a good resource online.
In this part of Pennsylvania.
Well, not exactly there, but close enough.
There's a good resource online, Kathy, called the Appraisers Association of America.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and you can search their website regionally and by category. So that might be a good place to start, especially if you're looking for an estate tax appraisal, you know, one that you need properly documented by somebody who's certified.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, the estate was already settled, and I was just given this, so it's.
Well,
I guess it's
you
mine
could have
now.
A nice finish, a nice thing there, as long as it's got a nice finish on it. And if you're contemplating doing anything to it, don't until you have it looked at.
Smart. Hey, Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go now to Alan in Clifton Park. Alan, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello?
You're on. Yes, hello. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead there, Alan. Have at it.
I'm calling about, I have a Civil War musket loader.
Hmm.
It's with a bayonet, and it's got a VT on the breech and a small American Eagle. It says 1851 on it, and then on the the end of the stock, you know, where you put against your shoulder.
Yeah.
It's got SC or CS. I'm not sure which way you read it.
Okay.
Confederate States or South Carolina.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the other guys.
I'm trying to get an idea of the value. I think it's a percussion, so it's not a flintlock.
Right. So they would have.
And it has a bayonet with it, and it's about as tall as I am. I'm 6'4".
Yeah. Well, that's
with the bayonet on it.
How would you describe the condition?
I mean, it's not rusty or anything. It's you know, the metal is bright.
Is the barrel still or anything? Sort of bluing in good condition? No real big pitting or anything?
The barrel's in good condition, but there's no bluing at all. It's kind of like almost silver.
Yeah, okay.
Or nickel-plated. I don't know. I'm sure what it is.
I mean, these are like David Tripp's coins. Condition is everything. You can buy a sort of a beater model to hang over your mantle for $1,500, and they go right on up to $15,000.
$1,500's a good chunk of change to hang over your fireplace.
It's a nice thing to happen, to have. I would really seek out, and this is a market all into itself, like baseball cards, coins, et cetera.
Yeah.
I would seek out a good military specialist to get a really more accurate description of that and its value. But it's a very cool thing. Has your family owned it? How did you acquire it?
My dad bought them, I think, in a barn in the 1920s.
Okay. Well, that's good. We like that sort of
provenance. I got actually three guns. I got a Maynard rifle, that one, and then there's a Springfield also from 1863.
Well, again, there's a lot of great military specialists out there to be helpful.
All right, Alan, thanks a lot. Now to Troy, and is it May or Mai? I can't remember. I know you've called before.
It's Mai.
Hi, Mai. You're on.
I have I don't have it. I work on the side doing architectural salvage, and the building I'm working in right now has a bank vault built into the first floor that's from the early 1920s. Are there people that collect that kind of thing? I know there are people who collect, like, safes, but I didn't know if there was the... I mean, I don't even care what it's worth. I just would like to find somewhere that would take it.
Wow. Is there any money in it?
I mean... Oh, no. Unfortunately, no.
Ah,
no money.
Rats. Okay.
I know.
Boy, the simple answer is not easy. This is really... I've never...
I know.
I get safes all the time, people asking us about safes. And we just sold a group of 16th and 17th century small safes in lock boxes, which were exquisite. But I'm afraid you've got probably a lot of scrap metal on your hands. There's
The building's coming down.
Yeah.
The building is going to be demolished. So I
don't know.
I mean,
that
maybe it would be left standing.
Could you? I don't think you could resell that in any market that I'm aware of.
How are you going to move it?
Yeah. No.
Gotcha. Well, that's why I'm asking. I didn't even know if it was a possibility. Okay.
No, sorry
about
that.
Thank you very much for.
That's so cool.
No,
I'll tell you what.
Fine.
I'll tell you what. If anybody is interested in having that, they should email this program, voxpop@wamc.org.
Nice, totally.
And Mai, why don't you shoot us an email and I'll put you in touch if anybody gets in touch.
Okay, then I'll tell you the dimensions. It's like 6 by 12 and probably 8 feet high.
And how heavy?
Oh, my gosh, I have no idea.
We'll call it an even 10,000 pounds.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for the call. You could just shoot me an email, and anybody who's interested, feel free. All right, let's grab one more here before we wrap it up with Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair. And we'll go now to Turner's Falls and Leonora. You're on. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, you're on. We only have about a minute, so go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling about a baking implement. It's a model, and it came from Austria, was given to me in the 1960s, probably early 1800s. And it is carved wood, one of a kind, and used for the Easter occasion when they baked cookies with it. They would press the dough into it. Now, this particular piece, I have two, has an elephant carved into it, an eel, a deer, a bird, and other animals. But the elephant is obviously carved by a person who has never in their life seen an elephant, not even in a zoo. I would like to... Yes, it's really funny. And I like to send a photograph to the auction house, and I have other items. So maybe it could be appraised or go to a good home, to a museum, a bread museum or something.
Well, Lisa's one of the best bakers that I know.
Well, really?
It sounds like it would make a great-looking cookie.
It sure would.
Oh, it does. And you cut them apart.
Yeah.
There are several inch carved into it, and usually these models, they are divided into squares even later. But this one has no divisions, no lines carved into it. So it's about 4 by 10 inches tall and has a live wood edge on it.
A live wood edge. That's very, very unusual. So maybe it's like
black. It has a stamp in the back, but that doesn't mean anything anymore because it's way old. It's well over, probably close to 200 persons. Not persons.
200 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would guess. Easy.
Well, I don't think you're going to retire on this, but it's probably worth a couple of $100s to the right person. I love the idea of the elephant. He sounds really terrific.
Deformed elephant.
Deformed.
Even better still. All right, hey, Leonora, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. We are out of time. Colin Stair, if people want to find out more about Stair in Hudson, New York, how do they do that?
Just simply go to our website, and there's a way to send pictures, and we're happy to do them in sort of order. We are busy, but we're happy to... Well, happy to get there.
Very great to have you on the show. Lisa Thomas, I didn't know you were a great baker. Why don't you ever bring anything when you're on?
Next time.
Yeah?
Next time. What's your favorite?
Well, I love deformed elephant cookies.
Okay, I'll try my best.
If you could do that, that would be swell. Thank you both for being here. Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. Oh, my reading skills. Oh, mercy. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts presenting a Zoom panel discussion of the film America and the Holocaust, May 6th, 7 p.m., sjca.sjcf@gmail.com. And Acres Alden Country Real Estate Services, a holistic transactional real estate brokerage serving the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts, berkshireacres.com for information. Thanks again to Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair for being with us today. What fun we had. They will be back. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Sarah LaDuke at the helm tomorrow. It's Pets and Vets. See you, too.